Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is T. Frank Carr. T. Frank, I hope you and all our listeners had a great Christmas. Now we're headed to the New Year's weekend. Got to ask you, first of all, are you one of those New Year's Eve party animal types? That's what I'm guessing for you.
At one point in my life, sure. But no, I am a stay at home. Whatever I do at home, maybe I stay up till New Year's Day. Maybe I don't. No, I used to be. But when you get married, a lot of those things that you're looking for on New Year's Eve, you take that care. That's taken care of. You don't need to worry about any of that stuff. So no, I'm in bed, hanging out, getting up the next day, starting the new year, trying to get ahead of everybody else.
Get a head start on 2024. And we joked ahead of time, you are not in your usual setup. You're holding the mic. It's like T. Frank reporting from on site.
Jim, they said that there were multiple people in the building, and we are trying to confirm the number. Yeah, I look like I'm reporting from the field. I'm in my father and mother-in-law's office, reporting from in front of their unbelievably beautiful bookcase. This is like one of those things where when you go to and you watch people that are professionals and do this, they always have a bookcase behind them. Well, I have my office here. There's an actual bookcase with books, you know, so you can tell these are classy people.
It's a good look, T. Frank. It looks good. I also like the classic typewriter over your left shoulder, especially. Yep. There you go. Yeah. Very nice. All right. Let's talk some Penn State, Ole Miss, Peach Bowl. That is coming up. Let's start, first of all, with those Ole Miss Rebels, the overview. Game is on Saturday at noon. I like the matchup personally, T. Frank. It's number 10 versus number 11. Good matchup. Big Ten versus Southeast Conference. James Franklin versus Lane Kiffin. I like the matchup. How about you?
Yeah, I think this should be a good game. These are two good teams. Penn State obviously has, at this point we're recording a little bit earlier, there is some ambiguity about some of the players that have decided to play or not play. I think pretty clear Olufashinu doesn't intend to play based on the way he's traveling to be with his team in Atlanta. That wording seems pretty clear that he's not going to play in the game, and if he does, you know, ceremonial snaps only. And then in the secondary, I think that you can expect some of those guys not to play either. Daquan Hardy's going to be part of the game. But as of recording, we haven't heard anything specifically, I don't think, about the corners, but that's going to be an area that's going to be very interesting, I think, in this matchup. The main area where I think Ole Miss, from a team perspective, that they've got some talent out wide, and if Penn State's young players aren't ready to play in this game, I think there might be some issues there. But the talent and the depth at Penn State, they've been preparing these guys, you know, in the bowl practices. So I expect Penn State to come out, whoever's at corner, and have a good effort in this game and to be, you know, ready and prepared for
Ole Miss. Let's take a look at this Ole Miss team. Let's start on offense. Let's start with the quarterback, Jackson Dart. We've talked a little bit about him previously. A pretty good quarterback. His numbers are pretty good. 65% completion rate. Threw for almost 3,000 yards. 9.5 yards per attempt. Touchdown to interception ratio 20-5. Tell us what to expect from Jackson Dart.
So he's an interesting one, and this offense is kind of an interesting one. You go off the numbers and you think this is a good passing team, and really the passing game is secondary to the running game for Ole Miss. In the games that I watched, even games where he threw for a lot of yards, they really want to be a running team. So a lot of their offense and their passing game is built off of the run game and establish. You know how I hate the words establish the run. As much as I hate that, that is, they lean on their run game, and then the passing game flows out of that. Not what I was expecting from a really spread offense from a formational standpoint. They like to play three receivers, one tight end, one running back. They'll do a bunch of things from formation. But Jackson Dart, I think his best quality is his downfield passing. His ability to hit seams, hit the ball on go routes and some harder throws over the top of the defense, but it's not primarily what they do. What they do is they want to control the line of scrimmage. Their offensive line is built to run the football. And then he is a distributor in the run game and in the passing game. And, you know, just I didn't watch every game this year, but I watched as many comparable games as I could find. And it really is kind of the opposite of what I expected, maybe from the personality of Lane Kiffin and kind of the wide open nature of this offense from what it seems like from the highlights. They hit explosive plays, but those are really supplementing the basis of the offense. And it just, he's an interesting quarterback where I don't think he's got a very strong arm. There's a little bit of Ryan Fitzpatrick in him where it looks like he's putting his soul into every pass when I'm watching him throw down the field. So, you know, he's got a strong enough arm to get to the ball where it needs to go, but it is at the height of his physical abilities, I would say. And then, you know, mobile quarterback, his legs are going to be part of the run game. He's going to be part of the scramble game, extend plays. So he's a really good quarterback, but maybe not what I was expecting, given what you just gave as far as those numbers and some of the almost 3,000 yards, et cetera. This team is a little bit different than what I expected.
And part of that, T. Frank, is they have a very good running back in Quinshon Judkins. And mm-hmm. In fact, I saw some places going into the season, he had an even bigger season in 22, I think he rushed for about 1,500 yards. This year, just over 1,000 yards, 4.5 yards a carry, mm-hmm. which is down from a year ago where I think it was more like 5.5 yards a carry. But he's the running back that carries the load. What's his style? What's he like?
So he's a really good vision runner. And it's interesting, kind of going off of what I said, that this offense wasn't at all what I was expecting. You know, when I put on the film and watched them, they remind me of the 49ers. You know, this is a very professional offense from some of the concepts it tries to run. It runs them in a college style, but they are a lot of things that I've seen, you know, looking at NFL film and NFL teams. And there's a lot of really ultra modern, newest thing you can add into offense that the brightest minds in the NFL are using. Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin are incorporating those into the offense. So it starts with, he's a good running back. He can beat guys to the edge. He's not the fastest guy in the world. He's not ultra explosive, but he's fast enough to hurt you. And he's got good vision. And they do a lot of things from the run game perspective with the quarterback, with deception, with setting up plays for the defense to run the wrong way, essentially, to put counters and things like that in the offense. So you get the linebackers flowing one way and suddenly Judkins is going the other way. But it's built off of, they want to run the football. They got a strong offensive line and he makes good decisions with the football. But it's not just him. You know, Jackson Dart had 500 yards rushing. Ulysses Bennett, the backup, had 500 yards rushing. So this is a team that's run for a lot of yards, that has a lot of different variety in the backfield as well. So they're a balanced unit up front from a rushing perspective. And I think that's part of Judkins and his production, is that he is the downhill guy. He's the guy that they're going to get the yards with, that are going to keep the offense on schedule. And I also think that up front, they're good run blockers. Overall, a decent offensive line of what they're asked to do. But I wouldn't say this is a talented unit. I wouldn't say that this is a unit that is, you know, going to send multiple guys to the NFL that are going to start long term. They are big and strong and physical, but I think they're also beatable in a lot of different ways from some different stylistic perspectives. And I think that Penn State's an equal match up front on defense with this offensive line. And if they can get them into third and long situations, if you can get this team out, this is kind of a Big Ten team in a lot of ways. If you can get them to third and long, Jackson Dart can do stuff to hurt you. But the drop back passing game on those third and long situations, the offensive line is not set up for that. And then from there, the quarterback and the receivers kind of flow off of that. So stop Judkins, stop the quarterback run game. And I think Penn State's in a good position in this game from a defensive standpoint. So kind of rinse and repeat as far as what we've seen so far from the Penn State defense all year long.
You mentioned, you know, you want to get their offense in the third and long. You could probably say that about any defense, but this Penn State defense specifically, they get you in the third and long. That's where they've been very good at it. You talked about a balanced running attack, but also as far as receivers goes, there's some balance there too. It's not like, okay, you stop one guy, you stop them all. They have three guys with around 50 catches each and over 700 yards, each one of them receiving. Dayton Wade, Jordan Watkins, Trey Harris. Tell me about that group.
So I'll start with Wade, and this is not from a value perspective. This is just from kind of going off of this is the run game, setting up the passing game. Wade is their slot guy, but he's also a gadget player. So he'll line up in the backfield and then go in motion. He'll be one of those guys that's trying to break the defense from a schematic standpoint of putting a slot receiver in the backfield. Is he a runner? Is he a receiver? Who do you match up with him? Do you show your hand by doing that? They do a lot of those, again, very modern NFL concepts. It's funny. I was watching this and I'm like, this is just Kyle Shanahan's offense that's a photocopy of it. There's a lot of those concepts from the NFL, from some of, again, I'm going to say the stuff that I am impressed by when I watch it, some of the concepts that I think are really smart, what they do from a passing perspective and a run perspective, it's all kind of melded together. So you use motion on run plays and pass plays to do different things, but they are coming from a similar situation. They're coming from a similar style. So theoretically the defense doesn't know what's coming, and you can pull players out of position to create those gaps either over the middle for the receivers or up the middle with the running game. So I think Penn State's defense is disciplined, and I think they're going to be able to handle that, but there are going to be some challenges and there are going to be some things. I'm interested to see how Penn State handles those particular actions in this offense, because it's a little bit more dynamic from a schematic standpoint than maybe some of the boilerplate Big Ten offenses they've seen. Now, they have also seen some teams that Michigan did a lot of similar things in their offense. They just didn't use any of it against Penn State. So they've prepared for an offense like this. Outside, Trey Harris, number 9, he is their downfield threat. I mentioned that this team, I think their best trait is their explosive over-the-top passing game. Dart is accurate. He can get the ball into those small windows. And Trey Harris and number 11, Watkins. The other guy, Jordan Watkins, both those guys are good down-the-field receivers. But I wouldn't say that even Harris is a guy that has, you know, first round NFL potential. This isn't a guy that's going to run by everybody and is he's not a Marvin Harrison type threat. He's a very good receiver. So he's going to get some jump ball situations. He's good in those situations, and he's going to cause some problems in one-on-one. Their receiving game is a lot. I don't want to say it's simplistic. That's going to sound funny given how I've mentioned it's a very complex offense, but the routes and what they ask these guys to do aren't necessarily all that complicated from a route combination standpoint, timing perspective, or really the drop back passing game. They try to avoid using the drop back passing game as much as possible, and they use a lot of RPOs and read options and play actions and things like that to get these guys open. So in one-on-one situations, Trey Harris is the guy. We need a play, we're going to go to him. And he's made a lot of plays. So that's, to me, again, coming into this from the Penn State defensive perspective, one of those young corners is going to have to step up and play a very good game, because Harris is a physical guy. He's big, he's fast enough, and he runs good routes. And there's a lot of stuff in this that I think can challenge Penn
State.
Very
good. And Trey Harris, he averages 18 yards per catch, and has 8 touchdowns.
Yeah.
That is it for quarter number one. Quarter number two, I'm going to ask how Penn State defends this without Manny Diaz as their defensive coordinator. Stay tuned for that.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.
StateCollege.com is your one-stop source for news, sports, opinion, entertainment, and community events. Over a decade of experience covering the Nittany Lions from reporter Ben Jones. Lively commentary from columnist Mike Poorman and others. Local perspective, local expertise, local information from Penn State's hometown website, StateCollege.com. TrustStateCollege.com for daily coverage of the school, team, and place you love.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's T. Frank. I'm Jim. We're talking about the Penn State Ole Miss matchup in the Peach Bowl coming up in a couple days. T. Frank, we spent quarter number one talking about the Ole Miss offense, and overall, Ole Miss has done pretty good as far as not having anyone sitting out the bowl game. We'll talk about the one guy in a little bit, the defensive end, Cedric Johnson, when we get to the Ole Miss defense. Offense, I think the only player that's missing, and it's an academic issue, is their backup quarterback. By the way, I'm always curious about an Ole Miss player being academically ineligible. You could fill in your own joke there if you like, Frank.
That's okay. I don't know. I'm bad at those.
All right. We'll just let that one go. However, if Jackson Dart gets bumped up a little bit, gets knocked around, that could become an issue. Otherwise, not a big deal. They should be at full strength on offense, meaning Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about Penn State and defending them. And at T. Frank, Manny Diaz, as the defensive coordinator, has been such a major part of the success of this Penn State defense. They are going to be without him for this bowl game. You and I had this discussion previously when we were talking about a new defensive coordinator. I lobbied for someone from within the staff trying to keep the same thing going. And you used the expression, you know, like Manny Diaz, he's the guy with the special sauce, you know, the secret sauce that makes this work. So my question is, okay, for a bowl game, how much effect will it be to the Penn State defense to not have Manny Diaz there?
That's a great question, and I don't know that I have a great answer for you. I would say that losing Chop Robinson and Kalen King, presumably, is equally as problematic as losing your defensive coordinator. Manny is as good as his players, right? So Anthony Poindexter is as good as his players as well. And Denai Dennis Sutton, Zariah Fisher, and Amin Vanover, Adisa Isaac, however much he plays in the game, those guys are going to help Anthony Poindexter look very good. Same thing in the secondary with Cam Miller and Zion Tracy, Elliot Washington, whoever plays at corner, Daquan Hardy. Those guys are going to determine a lot of this stuff, because you can call the same plays and you can be relatively in the same ballpark of intuition. Maybe you don't have it dialed in exactly. I also think that it comes a lot from the preparation and the creativity and the insight into film. How they do X, what are we going to do to counter that? That's as much a preparation thing as it is a calling it in game thing. And I think Anthony Poindexter has shown, you know, the chops to call bowl games. He's done it in the past, and Penn State's been pretty good. But at the same time, you know, there is the season long, it's a cumulative, I might say, more of Manny Diaz and his ability to know his team and adjust and adapt over this course of a season, as much as it is the in-game adjustments as well. But Penn State has been very good at those. So let's be clear, like, they have given up some drives and some yards early in the game, and then they just put the screws down as the game goes on, as they adjust and adapt more. So there will be some leakage, some slippage, but this is still a very good defense that I think matches up really well against Ole Miss. Because as we talked about, this is a team that really wants to run the football. And believe it or not, Penn State's really good at stopping the run. They've been excellent at stopping the run this year. And I don't think that this is a team that's going to have overwhelming talent from a offensive line or blocking perspective to knock Penn State off the football or to do things that will confuse Penn State. Because Penn State is a very disciplined team. They're very disciplined, you know, up front in their gap assignments and gap soundness. They don't make a lot of mistakes anymore. So all of those things are still there. Those players are still playing with the same scheme. They're still playing with the same attention to detail from the players around them. How the game plan gets translated over this month that they've been leading up into it, I think that gives you enough time to get everyone on the same page, where it's not, you know, 48 hours in 24-hour blocks is what I'm trying to say, of day-to-day-to-day, getting the information, getting the install, getting the game plan, and then getting it onto the field. There's more time, there's more ability to refine and adapt. So I think Penn State will be okay, but there's no getting around the fact that some of their best players aren't there and their defense coordinator has moved on. So we'll see where that ends up in the wash.
And see, Frank, what an advantage of this Penn State defense, if they're going, even if they're those players that we might expect still to sit out the game, and again, we're recording mm-hmm. this a few days early with the holiday schedule and all, there's also a very good chance they'll play limited snaps. The good news, though, is that's been the case pretty much all year. They play about 20 different people. So there are more players who have had that experience. It's not like, okay, well, in fact, they've played a couple games without Chop Robinson. So
Yeah. And I would say that that's, again, going back to the corner position, that's the one area where they've played guys. They've played Zion Tracy, but he hasn't played in the same way as maybe Cam Miller has. And Penn State does this. You make a good point. Penn State, they prepare their team to play without some of its best players. But when the rubber hits the road, those good players, the starters, are in the game. So this is a good litmus test for next year and Penn State's need, maybe in the transfer portal, for a corner, how these guys play. But from the defensive line perspective, and again, from the linebacker perspective, Curtis Jacobs is the one player that is going to participate. We don't know how many snaps he's going to play, but it's going to make sense for both sides. We all want to see Tony Rojas anyway. Like, you don't have to root for Penn State to want to see a human missile out there. And he's been really fun to watch. I'm excited to see, if he gets to play that Sam linebacker position, if it's Dom DeLuca, does Kavion Keys get any play this year as a developmental player? I think he was one of the developmental players of the year. How are they going to handle Curtis Jacobs and his role in this game? Some of those are the questions I have up front. But in general, the guys on the defensive line are coming back in force. And this is an area where that battle is going to control the offense. So it's going to be interesting. I think that even with some of the opt-outs, these two teams are evenly matched in that area.
If there is an issue, it would be, I think, among the DBs. Again, we don't know exactly if any of them, who's going to sit out, how their distribution of snaps is going to be. But if it is the case where we're going to see more of the inexperienced guys, as you said, more Cam Miller, Zion Tracy, might that cause the defensive coordinators, as you said, Anthony Poindexter, to call the game maybe a little differently, because you can't just trust that you've got Johnny Dixon and Kalen King back there that you trust so much? Hey, he can handle his job one-on-one, no problem. I could send seven people and not worry about
Jim,
it because I'm so confident.
You're making the argument I made earlier this year of maybe you don't want Poindexter to just run Manny Diaz's defense. You need Poindexter to run Poindexter's defense. And yeah, in the bowl game, if you don't have those players, you might have to adjust how you play. We'll see how it goes early. And I think that'll be an indicator also, because Lane Kiffin's not stupid. He knows he's got a good quarterback. He knows he's got some of these things. But it's the amount of time, I'm going to come back to this, the amount of time that both teams have to prepare for this game. Penn State is a really good team. They are really well prepared. They are really disciplined. I don't see that as much from the Ole Miss defense. And I don't see that as much certainly from the Ole Miss offense, where they are not always the sharpest group. They make plays, but I wouldn't say that this is an overly disciplined, focused group all the time. Just for an example, I see multiple games where at least one play, they snap the ball and half of the team is looking this way, getting it from the sideline. Right tackle's not moving. The intended receiver on a screen isn't moving. The tight end isn't blocking. Like, there are certain times where I look at this offense and I go, yep, that looks like the dude that's on Twitter a lot. You know, I'm not trying to take a knock at Lane Kiffin. I'm just putting context clues together and, you know, his particular style and what we know of him historically. He's a good coach. He's a very creative mind. He does a lot of good things well, but not everyone has every box checked, right? Like, not every person has every element of being a good coach. And they're a good team that knows what they're doing, but there are some certain small areas where I go, this doesn't look like an overly prepared, sharp team. So given the extra time, that can go either way for Penn State and Ole Miss.
Now, we're going to get to, in the fourth quarter, when Penn State has the ball, and we'll talk about the Ole Miss defense. But still staying on this, I'm interested with this Penn State defense. You mentioned Tony Rojas's name.
Mm-hmm.
In a bowl game, it's not only the last game of this season. In some ways, it's the first game of next season. It gives that opportunity for some of the young guys. It's a thumbnail sketch of a couple of the guys on the Penn State defense, the young players, who you're anxious to see play and why.
We'll start with Tony Rojas. He is going to be the future number 11. He's going to inherit sticks from Abdul Carter, in my opinion, just looking at the way he plays early on. Decisive, aggressive, confident, explosive. And then the only problem is I've seen him play Will linebacker almost exclusively since training camp. So I don't know how that's going to go. I don't know how they're going to deploy him, but I do think we're going to see him more in this game. We've seen him in the blue-white game play that Sam position, and then they kind of just scooted him along the development path because he's been ahead the whole time. So that's kind of like the nuance here with Penn State linebackers is they're all eventually going to be a Will linebacker if their development curve goes the way everyone predicts. But certain guys are going to start in the field, and some of them are going to stay a little bit longer, and Rojas has gone almost exclusively and almost immediately to that Will linebacker position, to the playmaker position where you can blitz, cover, tackle, play in the box, make more plays. And then from the cornerback position, Zion Tracy, elite fluid speed, very fast, a little bit undersized, an older freshman coming in from St. Thomas More, but a guy that I didn't have a whole lot of information on coming into the game into the season because there was so little film on him at St. Thomas More, especially playing corner. But he's taken to it pretty well, and he's beat out for the most part this season Elliot Washington, who is a guy that I highlighted last week as somebody that I think in Tom Allen's defense, if he plays the same style, might have an advantage as a guy who is a, I think, prototypical zone corner. Maybe he's not as big, but he is vicious. He is explosive, a little bit tight in the hips, maybe doesn't have the fluidity of a Johnny Dixon or a Cam Miller or a Zion Tracy, but a guy that, you know, as long as the mental side comes around in terms of like picking up the game and understanding things from an instinct perspective can be an explosive 5'11", 200-pound corner that plays the run really well and has good zone instincts. He's shown that in his high school career. So how he plays in this game and how Penn State uses him, what they decide to do with those guys, I think is going to be really interesting. It'll be telling as well of what they want to do with them and what they think their strengths are for the future. So I think those are the three main guys. I will also see a little bit of Jameel Lyons, and he's physical, fluid, strong. I'm really interested to see more of him because he's exceeded my expectations so far this year.
And that's, I feel like that's one of the fun parts of this. Yes, I would like to see Chop Robinson play another game. You want the stars, you want to see them play. But it's also fun to see the young guys. This is a preview of next season. I'm excited to see that. All right, T. Frank, that's it for quarter two. Stick around. Quarter three, we've got your questions. We're going to ask T. Frank.
Hey, guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.
StateCollege.com is your one-stop source for news, sports, opinion, entertainment, and community events. Over a decade of experience covering the Nittany Lions from reporter Ben Jones. Lively commentary from columnist Mike Poorman and others. Local perspective, local expertise, local information from Penn State's hometown website, StateCollege.com. Trust StateCollege.com for daily coverage of the school, team, and place you love.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
All right. Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number three, which means it's time to ask T. Frank. I'm Jim. He is the aforementioned T. Frank. This is where we take your questions. For T. Frank, he gives us a great answer. And if you want to send a question in for T. Frank, all you got to do is download our app, Keystone Sports. That's Keystone Sports. You'll see the Ask T. Frank, Ask Andy button, and away you go. T. Frank, are you ready for the questions?
I think we're going to find that out very shortly, so let's get to it.
I know you are always ready, T. Frank. Let's start with Matt from Massachusetts. He says, Jim and T. Frank, happy holidays. Well, the same to you, Matt. I appreciate that. A question on the expansion of college football playoffs. Do you think there's any concern about the health and well-being of the players? As soon as I saw a bracket, that was the first thing I thought of. Football's is brutal, which is why the postseason isn't a tournament like basketball is. I get that this is focused on a few teams, but still, that's a lot of games for the season and more chances for injuries.
Is it Matt or Brad in Massachusetts?
It's Matt.
Matt, I think that you're a compassionate person, and I think that you have a very fair thought. But we're not concerned about that anymore. Clearly, college football is not concerned about that anymore. I also think that was one of the excuses built in to not go to a college football playoff model, to keep the bowl games, to keep the bowl game ecosystem and all of those people that had invested interest in those things happy and alive, and not go towards an actual merit-based playoff system. We're starting to pay players. And it's going to very quickly get to revenue sharing because this is an unsustainable model. So I have fewer qualms with it than I did previously. Because, Matt, I was with you maybe 3-4 years ago before we instituted NIL, the transfer portal, and gave players some rights and some say in the situation. James Franklin is right, and Pat Kraft is right. This is an unsustainable model from a competition standpoint, from an equal playing field standpoint, from following the basic rules standpoint. This is unsustainable. So what are we heading towards? Because if this is unsustainable, we're heading towards something else. And revenue sharing is the logical conclusion, because we can't be playing all these games and making billions and billions and billions of dollars and still be in America and call this fine and fair. When football was a collegiate thing and before it was on television, that's a fair conversation to have. It's not anymore. And I guess that's the point, is we're kind of moving away from that particular conversation towards a different one, which is more professional based. And that's why I think a lot of fans are sad and tired of this ever pressing march towards something that isn't what it has been. But it's happening, and it's happening very rapidly. So I think we should care about players. We should care about their health and well-being. But from a business standpoint, that is an excuse. That is not necessarily a rationale to not do these things, because the FCS has had a playoff for years. No one brings that up ever. So, and I don't know how many regular season games off the top of my head they play, but they're also playing a lot of games and no one cares, because there is a certain amount of that is an excuse built in to have a BCS and to have bowl games and to have the local economies be able to have a share of this particular revenue pie. And as we get towards this consolidation of teams into conferences and conferences into power and money, those are just kind of what I, in my opinion, what they are now is just excuses. But I do think health and well-being of players can't be forgotten, but it can't be used as an excuse not to do some of the things that make a logical sense and perspective thing in college football.
We know the health and well-being is not the number one issue. We've known that for quite a while.
Yeah, from a decision-making perspective, absolutely. That is exactly right. I think coaches and administrators and fans should absolutely care. Don't twist my words on this. Don't think I'm saying something different. I care about these people as individuals. But from a business perspective, if you're at, those are two different things. And I'm trying to keep, if you're asking a big picture thing about college football playoff, player health and safety, it's that those two things are not congruent in the same conversation.
And yes, and we do know what the priority is. The fact that the players now with NIL, and hopefully someday, you know, some of the revenue sharing will go on for these players. So they share in the rewards. A couple things, though, I do want to mention. You know, Matt talks about there being more chances of injury, just that in 12 games versus 14 games, the 14 games, there's the odds are greater of an injury. But there's also the cumulative thing as you go over that many games, the recovery time. If anything, T. Frank, I think there could possibly be an elimination, at least some conferences, of the conference championship game, because that might help more teams make the playoffs in that particular conference. What do you think?
Sure. You know, the conference championship game can also be a play-in game for the playoff. You know, that can also be how it's built in if you want to have that extra game or however. I assume in this particular scenario that the conference championship game is the first round of the playoff. But obviously seeding and buys and all of those things are a part of it. So however you want to skin this cat, I don't really care necessarily because it's going to change. We're not done. The Big Ten and the SEC are not done. This is a consolidation. This is a hostile takeover. We're going to come up at some point with some larger structure that I think is more organized. But until that happens, we're going to have this hodgepodge of decisions, this hodgepodge of rules. And it's going to be, you know, I think you and I have had this conversation off camera. Somebody's going to be upset, right? Somebody's going to be mad that they're in a conference championship game and they lose and then they're out of the playoffs or they have, you know, the ninth seed instead of the fifth seed. We can't solve all those problems because we can't even solve the basic problems of how to follow the rules that are on the books of don't cheat in the transfer portal, NIL, all those things. So we're not going to be getting down to the nitty gritty of fairness here either. It's going to be get into the playoffs, don't lose games, be competitive, and you'll find out where you seed in that if you are amongst the 12 best teams. It's still a step in the right direction. It's just not it's not the complete step, and this is going to be a progress thing.
And by the way, making it a 12-team playoff, if you're a team that has really earned the right to play for a national championship, you are going to make that 12-team playoff, and the argument that's going to start between team number 12 and team number 13, I just don't care, you know?
Yeah, same.
Okay, unless it's my team, then I'll start caring, T. Frank. Let's go to Alan in Ohio, who says, in evaluating this Penn State offense against Michigan and Ohio State, how much of the struggles were on the scheme versus the talent level against two very good defenses?
So in my estimation, Penn State was the more talented team in several matchups that they lost. I'm on record, I don't think I was wrong about that. I think Penn State, maybe I overestimated what Drew Aller could do individually to lift certain parts of the offense. But we also heard from James Franklin. He wasn't getting any help in accelerating his play in those situations. He was not given easy things to do against Michigan. They ran the ball on first down. Like I forget the numbers, but the majority of his passes came on third down or in the third or fourth quarter. So he was not given the opportunity to attack a defense that I thought he could play against Michigan, against Ohio State. I think that they had the ability to block those guys on the edge. And there were some things they could do against that secondary that Penn State just didn't do. And if you look at the final two games, I understand it's Rutgers and Michigan, but from a scheme perspective, they made more sense of using the tight ends and not running them down the field and not using guys and trying to run a tight end from one side of the field to the other in a deep crosser to try to get them underneath cover. I can't go into all the individual nuanced things that we did in T. Frank's film room here in a hot pocket style answer, but yeah, the scheme was not good enough. The offensive coordinator was fired after the Michigan game. I think that's pretty clear. The talent and the issues with the talent at receiver were obviously a problem as well. So it's not that Penn State was overwhelmingly more talented than those other teams. But James Franklin went into the game against Ohio State thinking about what his victory speech might be, which should tell you he also thought they were talented enough to win that game against Kyle McCord in that offense, which did not light up Penn State's defense. If they had been able to score any points, they would have been able to have a chance to win that game. They couldn't. So yeah, scheme was a huge issue, but they were not, there weren't the same level of talent across the board offensively that the quarterback could overcome some of those things, given that the offensive coordinator was also considered part of the problem by the head coach.
I agree with you completely, T. Frank. There were some talent issues on this offense, but I think it was more scheme, and we saw that with the change at offensive coordinator. Let's go to Ed in Boyertown, who says, I know I'm looking ahead, T. Frank, But how do you see the cornerbacks doing next year if all of King, Dixon, and Hardy are gone? We touched on this a little bit earlier in the show, but I still want to hear your comments on that.
Yeah, I think it's expected that all those guys are going to go. And I think that they're talented, but they're young. And that's going to be an issue for the transfer portal, which we haven't seen a lot of movement. Again, we're recording early. Something might have happened over the Christmas break. And I hope, you know, for future me that you're watching here on screen, that he didn't have to work on Christmas Day because somebody decided as a Christmas present they were going to commit. Because that just, you know, I'm holding on to the hair I have left on my head as it is. But cornerback is obviously an area of experience they're looking for. Cam Miller is good. Cam Miller is a rising prospect that they have been grooming for this the last 2 years. They did not give him a red shirt. They got him involved early. And they have two guys this year, Elliot Washington and Zion Tracy, that are both very talented. And I think both of those guys can contribute. How their fit in the defense and how they work to the strengths of that room is going to be a big part of next year. You know, what are they going to do to accentuate the strengths of those players, which are, again, talented but inexperienced? What can they handle? What can they not handle? What are their strengths and weaknesses? I think they have the talent to be good. They've got two guys coming in that are very, very talented in Antoine Belgrave Shorter and John Mitchell, who are going to be thrust into that conversation as well. So the spring is going to be really important for that. I think that they can still play very good defense with the guys they have back there. It's going to maybe look different than it is, under Manny Diaz, where it was very specific what he was looking for from his corners, which is to be, you know, lockdown man corners and very aware when they blitzed how to not get beat deep.
All right, let's quickly sneak in our friend Jimmy from Forest City. T. Frank, do you think Penn State might use Quentin Martin in a wide receiver role, at least part-time, since the three wideouts in the class are recovering from injuries or arriving late to campus? You know how we all want a dynamic receiver.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think he's fixing the problem. So I guess that's where I've come down on this. He runs good routes for a running back. Does he run good routes like Tysier Denmark runs good routes? No, he doesn't do that. But he can be a multidimensional threat. I think the last time we talked about him, I called him a pass-catching option. I think he can be used as a gadget player. He even runs routes downfield. Like the last time we talked about him, I think I was a little bit wrong in what I said of he's not a guy who's going to run routes downfield. He can run routes downfield. I wouldn't say that they're precise. I wouldn't say that they're exceptional. But then again, what are you asking him to do as a freshman? What are you asking him to learn? He's got to learn the running back position first. He can't be moonlighting between the two. It's too hard. And it takes too much time for him to then be an impact player as a receiver. He can be an impact player as a guy who catches the ball, but I don't see him fixing any particular problems that we've been obsessing over.
Okay, that is it for quarter three. Still got one more quarter to go. Stick with us.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.
StateCollege.com is your one-stop source for news, sports, opinion, entertainment, and community events. Over a decade of experience covering the Nittany Lions from reporter Ben Jones. Lively commentary from columnist Mike Poorman and others. Local perspective, local expertise, local information from Penn State's hometown website, StateCollege.com. Trust StateCollege.com for daily coverage of the school, team, and place you love.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's T. Frank. I'm Jim. We're talking about this Peach Bowl matchup, Penn State, Ole Miss, Saturday at noon. I'm excited for the game, T. Frank. I think it's a really nice matchup. I think Penn State's like about a 4-point favorite in this one. So a pretty good matchup. We spent the first couple segments talking about when Ole Miss has the ball versus the Penn State defense. Let's go the other way. Let's talk about Ole Miss's defense. And just right off the top, their one opt-out, at least as far as we know so far, is Cedric Johnson. A defensive end will be sitting out in preparation for the NFL draft. Just the fact that he's preparing for the NFL draft, I assume he's a pretty good player, was their leading sack guy. Tell me about the Ole Miss defense. What are we looking at with them?
Yeah, it's a good defense that I think is a sum of its parts more than the individual talent. You even mentioned Cedric Johnson. He doesn't jump off the film to me necessarily. And I'll start with this. You know, I've been doing my best to be, you know, looking at film, but I'm also on vacation. So, like, you know, how much am I really grinding and putting my face into the grinder to get all of the details? I've got a good sense of this team, but from the individual perspectives and some of those things, you know, those details I'm still working on, believe it or not. We're recording this a little bit earlier. Obviously, you're hearing it on Wednesday before the game, but some of these things I'm still working through. And the defensive line is deep in terms of the number of guys they use and the number of guys that participate, but there's no dominant rusher up front. Jared Ivey is the other guy, number 15, that I think stands out, that I have noticed from a perspective of long, physical, strong player, but he's good. I wouldn't say that he would be a starter for Penn State, but, you know, they have a couple of guys from this hybrid defense up front that can get to the quarterback, but nobody is a huge threat. And that, you know, with the caveat of, we don't know exactly how Penn State's going to handle its tackle situation, if Javon Williams is going to be playing right tackle, or if JB Nelson's going to be playing right tackle, or if Caden Wallace is going to be playing right tackle. We don't really know some of those particular details, how the game's going to play out. But generally what we've seen, and this is why I'm going off of what I've seen from Penn State this year on the offensive line, at its full strength, this defensive line would not bother Penn State in pass protection for sure.
Okay, let's talk about the rest of the defense. That's the front line. How about the defensive backs? Would you consider that the strength of this Ole Miss defense?
Yeah, Drew Aller talked about them during Bowl Media Day, and I think he accurately described what they are, which is long and physical and fluid. They're not giant tugboat corners that can't turn. They're pretty twitchy. So they play off coverage. They play cover three, quarters, that kind of safety, fluid defense that's trying to add hats in the run game while still keeping a lid on explosive plays. So they're, you know, Lane Kiffin, a lot of this stuff is very trendy, right? A lot of the things that he's doing are on the modern side of college football and football in general. And this is one of those defenses where the safeties play well, the corners play well, and I think their corners are pretty talented from a physical standpoint. But again, I wouldn't say that a lot of these guys are going to go to the NFL draft and be high round draft picks either. DeAndre Prince, number 7, I think he's their best guy. But in general, their coverage unit, again, is good. These are good players that I think in general play the most buttoned up football, but I wouldn't say that they are unbeatable either.
How do you look at them as far as style of how aggressive are they? We at Penn State over the years, we've seen the defenses that were considered bend but don't break. We've seen over the last couple of years, Manny Diaz, the really aggressive defense. Where would you put Ole Miss's defense on that scale?
So we tend to think of aggression as blitzing. And that's kind of one area of aggression. And I'm going to tie this into Tom Allen and kind of his defense as well, because I think from a coverage perspective, Tom Allen is pretty aggressive in some of the things he does, trying to jump routes, trying to confuse the quarterback. There's a little bit of that with this defense. And again, the way they use their safeties, they really like to have a robber in the middle of the football field. So that's a safety that starts from a deep coverage and then is looking to jump underneath routes. That's a style of aggression. But if you're talking about, do they blitz like Manny Diaz? Nobody blitzes like Manny Diaz. So no, they're going to seem passive in comparison. When they do blitz, they like to bring zone pressures, which means they're bringing a linebacker and dropping a defensive end. Again, part of this hybrid defense is they'll run a 3-down front, but they'll stunt to a 4-down front and then have the opportunity to drop that defensive end into coverage. That's not even particularly revolutionary, seeing as Penn State does that from a four down front as well. So they're, I think from a blitz perspective, they're much more passive. And then if you look at them overall as a defense, I don't think that they're, you know, not aggressive. So the corners and the safeties like to tackle. They're physical. They want to hit you. The linebackers, I think, are pretty aggressive. They're not bad in run defense. They will give up some gaps. I don't think that they're the most disciplined front seven I've seen this year. And again, when I'm going through some of this defense, they're multiple and they're trying to confuse you. So they're using scheme to try and make the quarterback's eyes go buggy, right? To go cross-eyed if I don't know what I'm looking at. So that works at times, you know, even when you're watching film of like, what are we doing here? What are we looking at? Part of that is through the scheme. And the other part is the execution of this defense isn't always tight. And going back to that thing I said about Lane Kiffin and like good scheme, good mind does a lot of things that are modern and trendy, but I don't know that they're the most buttoned up disciplined team. And that comes through the front seven sometimes where they're not hyper aggressive with their details, if that makes sense. So I don't want you to get the impression that this is a passive defense, but it is not one that you would think traditionally as aggressive.
Okay, let's in looking at their schedule this year, they had they have two losses. They lost to Alabama 24-10. You'd say on the surface, hey, giving up only 24 points to Alabama, that's pretty good. But I believe it was very early in the year. Alabama was still, yeah, you know, looking to find their feet, where they get their balance going. They lost to Georgia 52-17, so they gave up 52 points there. Probably their biggest win was over LSU, a team that's ranked 13th in the country. They won that one 55-49. So they did give up 49 points in that. So 52 to Georgia, 49 to LSU. So there were teams that put up a lot of points against them. So now let's talk Penn State's offense. How do they attack? And specifically, T. Frank, I want you to get into – we talked earlier during the Ask T. Frank segment about some issues with how they schemed against Michigan and Ohio State. They get rid of the offensive coordinator, Mike Yurcich. They have the two co-coordinators come in. We liked what we saw in those last two games, but that was a pretty quick turnaround where they didn't have a lot of time to game plan. Now you have this month from the last game to the bowl game. What do you expect to see? Anything different? What are you hoping to see?
I don't know. I think that from a base offense perspective, I liked what I saw. I'd like to see a little bit more. I don't even want to say downfield passing. I don't think that that's the right answer. I just think that they were using their talent appropriately and they were using it effectively. They'll have more time to implement new or augmented plays that further take advantage of tight ends, receivers. Trey Wallace might be healthy again. We might see more of like what they would do with a healthy receiver. So, you know, I think that the problem I had going into this game was I want to find offenses that are similar to Penn State and how those teams attack this defense. But Ole Miss in the SEC, there's a lot of mobile quarterbacks out there. You know, Alabama has a mobile quarterback. LSU has a mobile quarterback. Auburn. So like I didn't go to Georgia because, you know, that the talent level might skew that perspective as well. Although I think it's a good comparison because Georgia was able to shut down their run game. And we saw they only put up 10 points when you shut down this run game. Penn State similarly can shut down this run game with the talent they have that is coming back that we know of, you know, from the front seven. So it was hard to find comparable offenses that attacked similarly. So I actually watched Texas A&M and their quarterback. But at the same time, they used two tight ends. They use a little bit more traditional. They didn't use the quarterback in the run game as much to distort the defense. And again, going back to the things I saw just from a basic fundamental standpoint, which is what I'm trying to establish as a baseline, Texas A&M could do some stuff. And I don't think that that offense was particularly talented as compared to what Penn State brings to the table. And if you give Catron Allen and Nick Singleton the edge, they haven't gotten that all year because they played an inordinate number of good defenses in the Big Ten. I don't think that unless they've spent a lot of time and are really, really into this game, I don't know that I'm going to see a lot of the same things specifically from Ole Miss in terms of discipline and ability to play football correctly from a fundamentals and foundational standpoint to Penn State's level. And if Penn State can execute, given that we don't know who's going to be on the offensive line for how many snaps, I still think, you know, Drew Shelton was a really good run blocker. Even as a freshman, he showed flashes of dominance. Javen Williams and Anthony Donko, both those guys have played very well in their snaps this year. I don't know if they can take on SEC starters, but I think that they can be comparable on the field, not being massive problems either. So Penn State, attack with the run game and then play action and some of the things you saw against Michigan State and Ohio State. But this, I'm sorry, Michigan State and Rutgers. This defense does not come to the level of, okay, they're going to have to play up to the level they did against Ohio State and Michigan. This is not that conversation.
But it is obviously better competition than Rutgers and Michigan State.
From a defensive perspective, no. I would say Rutgers defense is better. And I would say that that's pretty clear. Michigan State, yeah, no, that was a bad team. And that's why Penn State looks so good. But Penn State was also able to do a bunch of things against Rutgers, which is a better defense overall, I think, than this Ole Miss one.
Okay, T. Frank, we've got a minute left. Now comes the time with the question that you never like, but I'm going to give to you anyway. Penn State is a 4-point favorite in this game, last that I saw. How do you see the game playing out? And give me your prediction for the game.
So I like Penn State in this game. From a style perspective, I think, again, going back to that Georgia matchup of being able to stop the run, being able to run the football, and being able to control the game at the line of scrimmage, I think Penn State has the advantage on the defensive line. These are not good pass-blocking offensive tackles. But the quarterback, Jackson Dart, is a kind of a cheat code where he can do a lot of things with his legs and the downfield passing game that can maybe equalize some of that. And then so we go back to the corner position and that conversation. Can that keep them in the game? Offensively, I'm trusting that what we saw at the end of the year was progress and that they're going to have a clear picture for Drew Aller. And I still believe in his mind and his ability. So with a month to prepare, with a smart quarterback that likes to prepare, I'm going to go with Penn State. Let's say that Penn State puts up 38-21, Penn State.
Very good, T. Frank. I think the Penn State fans would like to hear it. If it's coming from T. Frank, hey, it's got to be a good prediction. Anyway, thanks so much, T. Frank. Enjoy the rest of the holiday and the rest of your vacation. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.
StateCollege.com is your one-stop source for news, sports, opinion, entertainment, and community events. Over a decade of experience covering the Nittany Lions from reporter Ben Jones. Lively commentary from columnist Mike Poorman and others. Local perspective, local expertise, local information from Penn State's hometown website, StateCollege.com. Trust StateCollege.com for daily coverage of the school, team, and place you love.